The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading from Smithsonian, the magazine of the Smithsonian Institution. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Kappen, and we thank them for their support. We continue to read from the October 2021 edition of Smithsonian. The Wonder of A.V. Loeb. The physicist thinks we might have glimpsed evidence of an alien civilization. Despite controversy, he's determined to find more. By Jenny Rothenberg Greitz. Abraham Loeb knows how improbable it is that he's here. First, there had to be a Big Bang. Stars had to form, and planets. On one particular planet, and no one really knows how, single-celled organisms had to appear and evolve into complex creatures. One species of primates had to learn to speak and write and invent technology. And in 1936, Loeb's grandfather had to have the foresight to leave Germany, making his branch of the family tree the only one to survive. Now, the Israeli-born astrophysicist, whom everyone calls Avi, is sitting on his porch in Lexington, Massachusetts, watching birds flutter around a feeder. He's 59 years old, the Frank B. Baird Jr. Professor of Science at Harvard University, wearing a black blazer and black polo shirt. His eyes are blue behind rimless glasses, and his wide-awake face seems to emit its own light. Loeb started out at Princeton in the late 1980s, studying the birth of the first stars. Harvard recruited him in 1993, and in 2011 he became the chair of the astronomy department, a position he held for 9 years. Since 2007, he has directed Harvard's Institute for Theory and Computation, which is part of the Center for Astrophysics, Harvard, and Smithsonian. He has published more than 700 papers and essays, making major contributions to the study of black holes and to gravitational microlensing, a technique for detecting objects that are shrouded in darkness all throughout the observable universe. But a few years ago, the trajectory of his well-established career took a dramatic turn. In October 2017, the University of Hawaii's Pan-STARRS 1 telescope caught the first-ever glimpse of an object from outside our own solar system, whizzing past the sun. They observed it for weeks until it disappeared from view and named it Oumuamua, a Hawaiian word that means messenger from afar, arriving first. The sighting was especially dramatic because the object behaved in a baffling way. It accelerated suddenly without leaving any visible trail, and reflected sunlight indicated that it was flat like a pancake. It was unlike anything astronomy had ever seen. Scientists propose various theories in scientific journals. Maybe Oumuamua was a piece of Pluto-like planet ejected from another arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Maybe it was a dust cloud with an ultra-low density held together by forces scientists couldn't understand. Maybe it was a hydrogen iceberg. Loeb suggested something completely different. Maybe Oumuamua was a light-powered sail manufactured by aliens. It was an astonishing idea coming from the chair of Harvard's astronomy department. This was a man who just a year earlier had launched Harvard's prestigious Black Hole Initiative, the world's first interdisciplinary program to focus on black holes. The legendary Stephen Hawking had flown across the Atlantic for the occasion, attending a Passover Seder at Loeb's home during the visit. No one expected someone of Loeb's stature to make such a suggestion, and some of his colleagues wished he hadn't. When we first discovered Oumuamua, of course, we joked. Could it be alien technology? Says Karen Meech, the interim director for astrobiology and solar system bodies at the University of Hawaii and part of the team that collected the data. We laughingly called it Rama for a while, she adds, a reference to the interstellar starship in the 1973 Arthur Clarke novel, Rendezvous with Rama. It was a hard experiment because the object was moving rapidly away from us. But still, we know there are comets and asteroids that share some characteristics with Oumuamua. So why would you go to the most extreme explanation and assume it's aliens? You still need to follow the scientific process, and I wish Avi had done more of that. But Loeb was struck by all the ways Oumuamua did not behave like a typical comet or asteroid. He discussed those anomalies in his book, Extraterrestrial, The First Sign of Intelligent Life Beyond Earth, published at the beginning of this year. Despite the bold implications of its subtitle, the book itself made no definitive claims about the identity or origin of Oumuamua. But Loeb argued that the science should be embracing the novelty of the object, and the search for extraterrestrials shouldn't be trivialized. In June, Loeb published another book about extraterrestrials, Life in the Cosmos, From Biosignatures to Technosignatures, a highly technical tome co-authored with astrobiologist Manasvi Lindgren and intended as a university textbook. The greatest gift of being a scientist is that you get to wonder and take risks, Loeb told me. When kids see a new object, they're curious. They play with it, turn the object, learn how the object behaves. Whereas an adult can look at the object from far away, from just one direction and say, I don't need to go over there and look more closely. I've seen objects like this before. I already pretty much know what it looks like from the other side. But maybe the other side looks completely different from what you'd expect. The way to gain knowledge is to pay special attention to things that don't line up. The public was delighted to see an eminent professor writing about aliens. Let this Harvard professor convince you that aliens exist, a New York Magazine headline proclaimed. He got a fresh wave of attention after the Office of the Director of National Intelligence released a report in June. Preliminary Assessment, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, which was based on 144 sightings by military pilots, things that hadn't reacted to the wind in expected ways or had moved abruptly for no obvious reason. The report acknowledged that its findings were largely inconclusive. In early July, donors started approaching Loeb, offering him $1.7 million to look for new evidence that would be more conclusive. So, Loeb started an endeavor called the Galileo Project. He and his colleagues would monitor the skies using arrays of their own telescopes, as well as data from large observatories. Artificial intelligence would help the scientists sift through the images and figure out whether, as Loeb puts it, an object was made by country X or made on exoplanet Y. And unlike the government, which keeps such information classified and releases selected details only now and then, the Galileo Project would make all its findings continuously available to the public. Avi is obviously a very out-of-the-box thinker, says Princeton astrophysicist Edwin Turner, a longtime collaborator of Loeb's. In science, we're taught to be conservative and skeptical in many ways. That's crucial when you're designing experiments and interpreting data. But that mindset can hold scientists back when it makes them reject any new hypothesis that doesn't seem consistent with everything we knew before. You want to be critical in your methodology, but unfettered in your imagination. By naming his project after Galileo, Loeb is making a statement about what it means to challenge the status quo. After the Italian scientist was branded as a heretic in the 17th century for suggesting that the earth moves around the sun, priests forced him to recant, but Galileo reportedly couldn't resist adding under his breath, "And yet it moves." For his part, Loeb has no intention of apologizing for his interest in extraterrestrials. In fact, he's just getting started. Astronomers spend their lives making awe-inspiring discoveries, the kind that can lead to gorgeous documentaries with cello soundtracks. They also tend to be territorial, which is true of other researchers. But there's something unique about the way this plays out in a field where the territories are cosmic in scale, and so much is still entirely unknown. Some astronomers specialize in small bodies like comets and asteroids. And for them, Oumuamua was life-changing. It was the first object humans had ever seen that formed in another solar system and entered our own. Talk to anybody who worked on it. It was the most exciting discovery of the last 20 years, says Daryl Sligman, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Chicago. Just detecting an interstellar comet would have been a huge deal, but the fact that it was a complete mystery in every single way made it more exciting. It's almost never the case that you discover the first of something and then in every way that you would expect it to behave. It acts the exact opposite. The oddness of Oumuamua became even more pronounced in 2019 when scientists made the second ever observation of an interstellar object. This time, everyone agreed that the novel object, known as 2I/Borisov, was a type of comet. It generated a trail of evaporated gas and dust as it passed close to the sun. Why, then, had Oumuamua acted so differently? Experts put out competing theories. Sligman and his doctoral advisor, Gregory Laughlin, a professor of astronomy at Yale, made a compelling case that Oumuamua was composed of molecular hydrogen ice. Steve Desch, an astrophysicist at Arizona State University, argued that it was a piece of Pluto-like planet that had been ejected from the Perseus arm of the Milky Way galaxy some 400 million or 500 million years ago. Three scientists at the University of Oslo, led by Jane X. Liu, pronounced what they called a dust bunny model, envisioning Oumuamua as a low-density fractal body that formed in the envelope of gases and particles surrounding a comet. Some of the disagreements have been cordial, and others less so. But there's still no consensus, which leaves room for a voice offstage to keep chiming in that Oumuamua could be an alien light sail. I mentioned Loeb to scientists who've been studying Oumuamua. One chuckled a long time before saying, "I get along with Avi, but..." Others complained he's saying outrageous things just to get attention. Some refused to even acknowledge his contributions in any other area. When I brought up the black hole initiative, one especially indignant astronomer retorted, "I'm a planetary scientist, so I wouldn't know of his previous work." In May, Desch, who had already disputed Loeb's theory about Oumuamua, openly criticized another one of Loeb's ideas. This time, Loeb and student Amir Siraj had weighed in on what killed the dinosaurs 66 million years ago. The widely accepted theory is that the dinosaurs perished after Earth was struck by an asteroid, which is composed of rocks and metals. Loeb and Siraj argued that the culprit was a comet, a smaller celestial body made of rocks, dust, and ice. Desch and his three co-authors sharply criticized Loeb and Siraj's argument on scientific grounds, and then went on to scold Loeb for wandering once again into an area outside of his expertise. Often there are differences in scientific culture between fields about how they deal with uncertainty or what constitutes a burden of proof. Desch and his collaborators wrote, "It is possible and rewarding to engage in interdisciplinary research, but it starts with opening dialogues with researchers in other fields based on mutual respect and a lot of listening." Loeb and Siraj responded to the technical criticisms but said nothing about the scolding. Some astronomers are more irked by the way Loeb often delivers his ideas, with an enthusiastic directness that can read as impatience. In February, Loeb had a tense exchange with Jill Tarter, the scientist who inspired the lead character in Carl Sagan's 1985 novel, Contact. Tarter helped establish a field called SETI, which stands for the Research for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. At a Zoom event, Loeb argued vehemently that extraterrestrial research deserves more funding and attention. Tarter felt he was overlooking the decades she'd spent lobbying for that kind of support. Afterward, Loeb emailed Tarter and apologized for his tone, adding, "I realize that I should have said that I greatly appreciate your past contributions to promoting this cause, and I'm delighted to join forces with you and push the envelope further." Tarter declined to be interviewed, directing me instead to Seth Shostak, a senior scientist at the SETI Institute. "I don't think Avi is right about Oumuamua," Shostak told me. "We've got people here who study asteroids, and they say there's nothing to suggest it wasn't a naturally occurring object. If some guy from Bismarck, North Dakota, whom no one had ever heard of, was saying what Avi is saying, people would respond, 'Come on, it's just an asteroid.' But this is a Harvard astronomer who was the chair of the department, clearly a very bright guy. So you sort of have to take him seriously. The SETI Institute is funded by private donations, but that wasn't always the case. Back in the 1960s, when radio technology and space travel were advancing rapidly, it seemed plausible that humans might be ready to find other intelligent beings. The American astrophysicist Carl Sagan and his Russian colleague Ishov Shklovsky made a scientific case for this project in their 1966 book, Intelligent Life in the Universe. NASA gave funding to SETI-related projects from the 1970s until 1993, when Nevada Senator Richard Bryan introduced a budget amendment that killed the program. As of today, Bryan argued in a widely quoted statement, "Millions have been spent, and we have yet to bag a single little green fellow." Unlike Loeb, who blames science fiction for making the search for extraterrestrials seem unserious, Shostak makes playful references to finding E.T. and even appeared in a Star Trek video. But his actual research is cautious and methodical. He and his colleagues at the SETI Institute haven't announced any extraterrestrial discoveries yet, but he notes that their equipment is getting better all the time. In the 1960s, the astronomer Frank Drake searched the airwaves for alien transmissions using a single-channel radio receiver. Today, Shostak and his colleagues are using 72 million channels, each one listening to its own small slice of the radio dial. As the numbers of channels keep growing, SETI researchers hope they'll be able to speed up their search. Loeb has a different approach. Instead of radio broadcasts, he's looking for physical artifacts. chemical byproducts of alien technology. But he and Shashtag both think their approaches could be complementary. Loeb is eager for the opening of the Vera C. Rubin Observatory in Chile in 2023. Its digital camera will have the highest resolution of any, rather, of any ever invented, over 3 billion pixels, and it will take nearly continuous photos of 20 billion galaxies. Each individual photo will cover an area as large as 40 moons. The observatory will vastly expand the field Loeb likes to call space archaeology. Because the search for extraterrestrials involves such unorthodox thinking, it might necessitate jumping across well-established lines. Most scientists are incredibly narrow, says Sarah Seeger, an MIT astrophysicist and MacArthur Fellow who innovated a groundbreaking method for studying the atmosphere of far-off planets. But like Avi, I work really broadly. If something interests me, I just go for it. Seeger and her collaborators are trying to figure out which planets have basic building blocks for life as we know it. Water, for instance. If we can establish that, it's like baby steps, right? She says. But even though her own approach is more incremental, she sees no reason that Loeb should be discouraged from looking for signs of alien civilizations. The way I think of it is, why not? She told me. Why wouldn't you look for that? If it's relatively straightforward, why not try it? One of the artifacts Loeb keeps from his family's history, stored inside its original box, is an initialed pocket watch that belonged to his grandfather, Albert Loeb. The Loeb family lived in Germany for 700 years, and Albert won a medal for his service during World War I. Today there's a street in the central German hometown called Albert Loeb Way, but in 1933 Albert went to a meeting at the town square and heard a local Nazi party member blame the Jews for Germany's struggles. Albert pointed out that he'd served on the German front during the war. "We'd all know about your patriotic contributions, Mr. Loeb," the Nazi replied. "I was talking about the other Jews." Loeb threw away his medal and in 1936 moved with his wife and children to British-controlled Palestine. His other relatives stayed to see if the situation would improve. None of them made it out alive. By the time Avi was born in 1962, his father David was a pecan farmer on a Moshav cooperative farming community. His mother, Sarah, had abandoned her education when she left Bulgaria in the 1940s, but she nurtured a rich life of the mine for herself and her children. When Loeb was a teenager, she started working toward a Ph.D. in comparative literature. Loeb sat in on some of his mother's philosophy classes and read books she was reading. His favorites were the French existentialists like Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus. Loeb is secular in the way many Israelis are. He celebrates Jewish holidays and sees the Bible as a record of his ancestors' thought. They, too, were interested in origins of the stars. Loeb envisions a space-age Noah's Ark. You don't want to board elephants and whales and birds because it's very cumbersome to lift them into space, he says. All you need is the DNA. You can put it on a computer with artificial intelligence and a 3D printer such that you can reproduce it. When Loeb talks this way, he sounds like a philosopher doing a thought experiment. This is one way to understand his outspokenness on Oumuamua. He's urging the scientific community to consider that a novel object like Oumuamua could be alien technology. But what makes Loeb a scientist is he's ultimately pushing for evidence. If Oumuamua turns out to have been a hydrogen iceberg, Loeb says he'll be fine with that. In that case, we need to look for other hydrogen icebergs, because that means there are nurseries making objects we've never seen before, he says. This is not a philosophical question. My point is that this should intrigue us to collect more data. Loh became an astronomer almost by accident. In 1980, based on his strong test scores in high school, the Israeli military asked him to apply for Talbiot, the elite program for developing new defense technologies. Each year, Talbiot puts a small class of recruits, originally 25, now 50, through 3 years of science education as they undergo grueling physical training. Loh was such a standout that instead of serving as a combat unit, as Talbiot graduates generally do, he was allowed to earn a Ph.D. in physics at Hebrew University. When he was still in his early 20s, the leaders of President Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, known colloquially as Star Wars, invited Loeb to Washington, D.C., to present a new method for propelling high-speed projectiles. The U.S. officials listened to Loeb and then put his ideas into practice. They just followed my theoretical research, and they scaled it, and it worked, he says. Loeb ended up meeting the legendary physicist Freeman Dyson at Princeton. Like everyone else, Dyson was impressed by the young scientist and suggested he speak with John Bacall, a Princeton astrophysicist who invited Loeb to join him for postdoctoral research. Loh knew nothing about astronomy at the time, but Bacall's gamble paid off. Today, Loeb thinks of his relationship with astronomy as an arranged marriage that worked. Unlike philosophy, which allows thinkers to spend their lives floating in the realm of big ideas, science ultimately demands concrete proof. Even Einstein's widely accepted theory of general relativity was confirmed only a century later, when scientists detected the first gravitational waves and took the first picture of a black hole. An empirical test is a dialogue with nature, Loeb says. You have to listen to see if nature confirms your ideas. You can think of it like Bernie Madoff. He proposed a beautiful idea. He told people, give me your money, I'll give you more in return, irrespective of what the stock market does. Everyone was happy until they did the experimental test where they said, give us back the money. Then he was put in jail. So why is an experimental test necessary to find Ponzi schemes? Loh's actual marriage to Orfit Levitan started with a blind date in Tel Aviv in 1997. Loeb returned to Harvard, and Levitan eventually joined him there as a lecturer on law and politics in the government department. In 2005, the couple and their daughters, Lodom and Kel-Lil, moved to Lexington to the kind of leafy neighborhood you'd expect. And I hope you've enjoyed today's reading of Smithsonian. We had to cut it just a little bit short. I'm Frank Urban, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Keppen. We thank them for their support.